The theme for the afternoon talk is the self and the deep. We could say that, can you hear? We could say that the idea or the construct of the self is something. We could say it is something that we are familiar with. There is the notion and the belief and the frequently expressed idea that I am somebody. And we get to be known by others, in fact, and by ourselves, by the way that we relate to this world. And the world of others, the world of events, does tend to define us. It kind of states who we are. And when we look more carefully at this sense of I, this sense of who I am or what I am, we actually begin to appreciate and recognize that rather than being something or someone, rather than there being any kind of essence, if we look carefully at this construct of I, it actually is an absence. And it's not a nothingness, but an absence in that its affirmation, so to speak, its determination, is shaped and influenced by what I want, by the needs which I have, by that which I have gathered, and which has come to me. And that which I have gathered and which has come to me in the varieties of experiences, knowledge, roles, and identities, this shapes who I am. So the construct of a self, the construct of I, is completely and utterly bound up with the events that make up my life. My patterns, my habits, my thoughts, my views, my roles, my identities. So from the absence, this comes into the absence and fills up the absence. And in that, I feel I am somebody. And yet, what we notice again and again, that there is no resting place for this self. There is no time and moment, or only briefly, in which the self can be at peace with itself through this meeting with the world and the endeavor to get from the world what I want. And what we find and notice in this self, which is the absence, that as I keep reaching out to acquire experiences, feelings, events, situations, environments, others, people, knowledge, roles, jobs, whatever, that I do get, or this, that is this self, a temporary relief from the wanting. I've gone after this and that. The wanting has been fulfilled, and the relief from the wanting gives some quietness for a period of time, and then the sense of absence, which is the self, arises and re-arises again, and then something else is wanted, or more than one thing is wanted. And this becomes a primary movement of life, and it's given such significance and importance, it becomes a view of life in which nothing else matters but maximizing what I want. Because the wanting confirms me, getting what I want confirms me. And if the wanting and the getting what I want drops away, then the self loses its function. And this dynamic, which is rather bizarre for human beings, that somehow or other we don't seem to be able to wake up from this kind of viewpoint, that this activity, absence, wanting, getting, temporary relief, re-wanting, getting or not getting, temporary relief, that this cycle, this loop, this ongoing activity, surely life has to be more than that. Surely that can't be the purpose and the reason for our existence. And sometimes in our anguish and in our frustrations, some questioning may arise for us, in which we ask ourselves, and it's perhaps one of the most thoughtful questions a human being can ask, is this it? And then death. Is that it? And we have been so enraptured, we could say, with this movement of the wanting, that when we get whatever it or that or he or she may be, the self affirms and it builds itself up, and it has to engage in comparison. And the comparison is with what others have and with what I have. What they have accomplished and with what I have accomplished. And that can feed and boost up the idea of the self, or the swing is the other way and we put down ourselves. Either way, putting ourselves up or putting ourselves down is the confirmation and the reaffirmation of the self. It's just that one's boosted and energized with a pleasant feeling, I'm a success, and the other one is boosted with an unpleasant or painful feeling, I am a failure. And that dynamic moves us, and then, as I say, we might reach the point in life where we say, well, am I going to settle for this? Millions of people seem to have settled for it. Society tells us that we will only be successful in getting what we want. And then some questioning gets underway. And what we notice in the absence of, that the impact of that, as we look a little bit more deeply, that the impact of that, it sparks, it triggers, it causes a kind of dysfunction inside the being. And one of the most common ones of dysfunction is choice. It's something which has been literally sold to us. And we, being naive, foolish creatures that we are, have bought it. And because of the intensity of the message of choice which is given to us by all sorts of people, the consumer culture, the spiritual culture, the psychological culture, that because that word choice is so charged and loaded in our constructions, our internal constructions, instead of being helpful, it's become unhelpful. And the way that it's become unhelpful is that when the language of choice, with the feelings that go along with it, start to exacerbate, that means increase there, it goes from shall I or shan't I, maybe I could or maybe I couldn't, perhaps I should or perhaps I shouldn't, and there is this profusion of choices taking place inside, and the thought, which is merciless, the thought arises, I have to make a choice. So the thought, in its arrogance, imagines that itself is outside of the choice. It's looking at the choice as some kind of independent, free witness who looks at it and says, well, I could do this or I could do that. And sometimes it's dualistic and it's, whatever the word might be, trialistic, quadrupleistic, multiple choices, nightmares upon nightmares. And the potency of that is due to, not to choice, not to any wisdom, it's actually due to an insufficient depth in the being. And in the pull, what we call here of the choices, there's an extraordinary movement in the inner life which says, somehow or other, there has to be a real and significant difference which thought has made between this and that. And as we highlight the difference, which means the polite word for exaggerate, as we exaggerate the differences between one thing and the other, that magnification of the differences there doesn't bring about the resolution. It moves from so-called choice to a dilemma, to a conflict, to feeling tormented, to unable to sleep, and sometimes to a complete breakdown. So the inner has, in its movement, in the name of self-interest, of which there is no self for the interest, in the movement that goes on in the being, it manifests in one direction, it manifests in the other, and that polarization, that separation, intensifies, and we find ourselves in incredible confusion. We brought the language of choice. We haven't known what we're doing to ourselves. Many times, in the self and the deep, lots of things, and many, many things, including many of these so-called choices, are actually incredibly inconsequential. They have no real significance. I might wear black and white striped shirt, and I might wear a white one, and I might wear a blue one the next day. Frankly, it doesn't. It doesn't matter to me. It probably matters far less to everybody else. So one goes to the shop, as a small, and one says to oneself, choose that rather than that. It's utterly irrelevant. It has no significance whatsoever. What I've got in mind is where something is given the exaggerated significance which triggers inside of us some divisiveness in the being. When we look from our experiences, and we might take the retreat as an example, and incidentally, there are some people who nobody has said it yet, and hopefully not. Some people say to teachers, when I go back into the real world, this kind of implies this is not quite so real. And some of us think it could be the other way around, but anyway, that's another view. So sometimes, here and elsewhere, there is the movement of causes and conditions. There is no self, any substance. As I say, it's an absence, and things move in that absence to get. So when we take temporarily out of the view of this construct called the self, We may then begin to view this whole movement of life not from me and I and self and all the fiction and falseness and suffering of it, but rather to look at the causes and conditions. This is very, very key here, to what arises. The causes and conditions to what arises. And human beings cannot, as the act of the will, simply choose to stop what arises. One can't stop what arises outwardly. So you may be sitting here at the moment, and your mind is long gone from what Christopher is talking about. You know, you can understand why. And then I go... If anybody was in a daydream, it just stopped. One can't stop the external impacting on consciousness. Now, and if you slept through that, I'm impressed. So, the impact of the world, that which is around, passes through eyes, ears, nose, tongue and touch. And in the impressions which come through these doors, make some registration or some impact here, there. Not only does that impact upon us, but it also, and significantly, has the capacity to stay internalized. That you and I have experiences, beautiful, spiritual, religious, devastating and painful, which have an impact, and though that world which impacted upon us may have faded away, the event, he, she, that, this, whatever, it leaves its mark. It leaves its impression. It's gone into the being, and it's registered in the being. It may come up as memory, or... And sometimes it's just memory, with no charge to it. I remember this happened, it had an impact. It may arise in the present, without any deliberate intention to go to it. It arises, and in its arising, taking place in the present, the relationship to it may be welcome or unwelcome. So, the intention may go to, and quite often, in the vastness of life, in all that's ordinary and everyday in the field of existence, it's in the particular, I've touched upon this a day or two ago, it's in the detail, it's in the small event of life which has its impact, which has the capacity to leave its impression. So the inner life is rich and poor with a range and diversity of impressions. When we meditate, it is another way of saying, I'm giving the opportunity for this variety of impressions, painful, pleasant, and in between, to arise. So they form, and we say, we see in ourselves, we'll talk with teachers or whatever, this has arisen. This is present at this time. They were not created by you, because the self is not self, and it has no power whatsoever to create. The causes and conditions are ripe for its presence, and then, the concern of the human being, for some of what arises, is this has arisen, and the wish is for some of that which has arisen to stop arising. For that sometimes which has arisen, for its continuity to stop. It arises, one sees it, one feels it, one experiences it, and the wish is, and it's a valid wish, this which is painful to stop. And human beings are constantly engaged in the dynamic of arising, its continuity, and the wish to stop. The wish to stop, which is a deep human wish, which I think is has a wisdom in it of itself. But the wish itself will not carry the power for the cessation of that which has arisen to stop. That which is coming up and which I'm experiencing, for its continuity to come to an end. The wish is only a reminder that there must be something other than living like this. And that movement, that means the movement of the wish, in its arising that, and its present, it is, as I mentioned, the recognition. But then, what are the changes which enables me to look at the causes and conditions, and there are not too many of them, what led up to it, as I spoke to you about the other day, in order that in the dynamic that goes on, something is to be seen clearly and understood. I need some penetration. And what often happens is, with our pathetic instant coffee mentality, that we imagine if I look at something and I see a cause or a condition for it, the very fact that I've looked at and seen it means it should change straight away. This is instant coffee, right? And one has overlooked and has forgotten that in some cases the period of time of accumulation of this pattern, this anxiety, this agitation, this worry, this blaming, this fearfulness, has gathered a momentum, and therefore the counter to it is a real commitment. If a person says, I do not wish to live in any more anxiety or any more worry, it's a noble endeavor, but it will require such a consistent commitment and the recognition of all that which is not that during the day, so that a momentum is, and the darkness, we see the light and we come out of that tunnel. But it's a full-on commitment. It's a dedication. And when a human being has looked at the particular and says, this has arisen, it's having some continuity, and it has to stop, the power of that determination, with good skill, good resources, there is no problem of the human being that cannot be resolved. The persistence, one of the key words of the Dharma, with skillfulness, with sound support, with the commitment from within, put those causes and conditions together and really be dedicated to it. The past and its painful history cannot withstand the causes and conditions which contribute to transformation. Because one is in the authentic of the real, in terms of the living present now, and the other is its images. There's no substance to it. It's pictures, it's ideas, it's stories, it's thoughts, is a conglomeration without anything of substance to it. Any of them. And sometimes you and I, we've looked back at a so-called drama in the life, and we've got a bit of space around that drama, and we've looked back on it, and we've said to ourselves, and we've said to each other, what was that all about? And if you want a little bit more straightforward English, what the fuck was that all about? And sometimes we, forgive me for those of you who are religious, and sometimes we realized there was a storm which was going on within, and there's been some piercing of the bubble. It's just fallen apart. And we wondered, as I said, what was that about? And realized it's just about, not about the real. The real is unshakable. It's about images, ideas, thoughts, feelings. And we say, well, that movement, that activity that was going on, is that really a problem? Those little dances and movements and activities go in the consciousness, is it really so problematic? Or is it? I think it is. Is it? I've made it up to be. Is it? I've put so much into it. I've ruminated on it too long. And therefore, those inconsequential little dance of thoughts for us seem to be the wood for the fire, along with memories and feelings, ideas and opinions, pleasant and painful. And when we unpack all of that, we see, as the tradition has said, the utter emptiness of it. And the self is not the recipient. This is to give the self far too much self-importance. It's not, it never was, this is happening to me. This is a lie. It's a devilish thought. It's a misunderstanding. It's just in the conglomeration, in the formations, in this case of the inner life, in all of that, the friction of the eye is in the picture. If it was, it is happening to me, therefore the me or the self is the recipient of this, therefore the me would have power. It's so central, it comes to me. Well, if it has that power to come to me, and me has the power to receive it, then me has the power to say, no, thank you. You could say, no, thank you. And the dance, the movement, the conglomeration, will still keep impacting. So it isn't easy, but a worthwhile exploration, to see, can I shift out of the idea it is happening to me to a sense this is causes and conditions at work which are worthy of looking at. And therefore, using rather little the language of I and me, especially around suffering. Yeah. Some people, slight. Let me just hit the water for a moment. Oh, bless you. Oh, great, yeah, thanks. Some people will say, in the kind of circles sometimes that we move in, there must be something which is other than all of this. Processes of life, the becoming of events, the challenges that it brings, the working with causes and conditions. There must be something other. And human beings, at times, find it difficult being with the unfolding events of life, for all the good, sound, so-called reasons for that. Yeah. So when human beings, finding it difficult to face life and see that the tiger of life actually has no teeth, we want to opt, we want to move towards something other than religion. No, I didn't say that. So there's the life and the exploration of life, and it's hard and it's difficult, and therefore we want have a sense of the something transcendent. And one of the, not the only one, one of the popular words is there must be something beyond. And so the inner life, easily and terribly humanly, generates the idea of a beyond, which, to be fair to the inner life, can give some comfort to have a belief and consolation, to have a belief in the beyond as a way of giving relief to the inner life from having to face this. And many, many, many on this earth, as we know, will take comfort in the sense of a beyond, which often is defined by the single word. I forget it now, but you know what I mean. But the same also goes on in the so-called spiritual life as well. And though the beyond language may be forsaken, given up, though there may be too a sense of the other, with the capital O, and the gap which is there is too big to comprehend, too big a leap to make, but some say the gap between me and the other is too big. And sometimes there is the wish for a bridge, for a link. And then we have it, of course. Human beings will think up anything. And the bridge will be the book. Not a book, the book. The bridge will be the master, the avatar. What are they? What, the guru, the saviour, the enlightened teacher, or whatever. So she or he, sadly mostly he, becomes the bridge, or is perceived. So there is the wish for the other. The gap is too big, but it does get me away from my experiences of life. And I can concentrate and focus and give my attention and my devotion there. And as I say, genuinely it gives some comfort and consolation. But I'm not sure if it's about the real. I'm not sure if it's about the real one little bit. No matter what the consolation may be. Then there are others. I must have told this before, I'm sure, Stephen. When I was a monk, this a small incident, this is a slight story to give you some relief from the talk. when I was a monk, the missionaries, bless them, well, not too much, but anyway, bless them, would come. And this was in the monastery, 15 hours south of Bangkok. Actually, in a town called Nakhon Sri Dhammaraj. It's a rather nice name. It means the city of the kings of Dharma. I was just a peasant of the Dharma. And so I was there, and the missionaries, time to time, would come. Deeply concerned for my soul, which I don't have anyway, but anyway, deeply concerned for it. friend would come over, or the Vipassana teacher, the abbot, would send them over. Oh, no, please, you know. Bible in one hand. You know, oh, dear, dear. Tragic. Century ago, it was Bible in one hand and sword in the other. Anyway, so they come, and then they would say, there is only one way to reach God. Oh, no, please save me from this. So I'm trying to do my meditation. And there's only one way to reach God. And that, of course, is through Jesus. And then he said, if to reach, and Jesus is like the telephone operator. And so if you want to reach God, you've got to, and there's only one telephone operator in the whole of human existence, his name is Jesus. So you have to get in touch with the telephone operator, and he will get you to God. I said, I'm a Buddhist monk, we don't use telephones. So sometimes there is the gap, and then there's the wish to bridge the gap. And you say, as a human being, can I live without that? Not easy. Can I live without that and not settle for the idea of a self with a single purpose in life, which is often for status, for position, for success, and for the endorsement of political, secular values? Can I live and explore life in which I'm not making the gap, but I'm not also imagining that life is about getting what I want in all the ways that you and I know? There is also an equally in the spiritual world. And though the language of God may be dropped or not used for the varieties of reasons, another language then starts to come in. And rather than beyond the language, it is behind. The essence. The pure consciousness. And that language of the underlying reality. And so, in an odd sort of way, in our relationship to life, sometimes we go for the beyond as a human endeavor. Sometimes we say, this, which I'm experiencing, is not enough. It's not satisfactory. It's not fulfilling. Therefore, there must be something behind it, or behind me. And there must be an essence to all of this. And so, therefore, that which I experience is actually only appearances. And behind the appearance is the true reality, the essence. A myth. It's a myth. It's another form of undermining the immediacy of the world. It's making a claim there is something behind it. And the claim of something behind it and the position of that is an unprovable. We either with each other have to believe it or we question it. We either in our relationship to it, the self can start thinking, I've got it, I've got behind it, I've got to the essence and this is it. And when any kind of language to try to explain it comes in, it's going to be problematic. Problematic. And I wonder whether we can be bold and maybe a little brave to free ourselves up from the comfort of beyond and behind, of God and essence there. And then things are really stripped down now because we ain't got anywhere left to go. And we're back right where we started. And we can't just say anymore to ourselves, getting what I want with temporary satisfaction is an intelligent way to live. And then some other, I hope you're not waiting for answers here. I might say thank you, good night, and shalom. So sometimes in the exploration there, perhaps that which is real and truth is closer than beyond or behind. Beyond or underlying reality. And therefore, could it be that in this immediacy, with these causes and conditions which arise and present to us, could it be right in all of this, with all of this, that there is an infinite to be discovered? And I'm not afraid as a human being to drop all the religious, spiritual, Buddhist rhetoric and all the distractions that go along with it and somehow ask and explore that, is there an availability, so to speak, right before our eyes? And what might be the appreciation and the realization for this? Hesitate to use the word, but since I put it in the title, I better. There is a depth with humans, and I've got in mind here, because the thought can arise so very, very quickly. Oh, okay, it's not God. It's not essence and behind, it's going deeper. That's really what it's about. Sadly enough, it's a perpetuation of the same problem. That somehow or other, we're not satisfied. This self, which is not self, keeps imagining in some way or other something more will come from somewhere, behind, above, or deeper. And you may have to talk afterwards, because one of us talking is bad enough. And the other is, I can't hear a word. So, back to the immediacy of life. And therefore, it may be, to use the word again, enough depth already, just by the virtue of being human beings who are conscious. And if I don't take the thought, oh, I haven't gone deep enough, my practice hasn't gone deep enough, and I've stopped using that language, but I'm sincerely and genuinely interested in this experience of being human, that in the abandonment, letting go, whatever we may say, therefore, the immediacy has a potential which is infinite. It's key here. It is infinite. And you and I know, surely from our experience, that the particular, whatever it is in life, that we give our attention to, we direct the samadhi to, we put the mindfulness to, that particular there has, in the dynamic which we might call subject and object, the particular has infinite possibilities for what it can reveal. How many times in life have you and I looked at something which is familiar to us? We read a book, we read it a second time, and wow, so much fresh has emerged from it. We see a film, we meet another human being, we go to a place or whatever, we look at a single plant, and we give it our full attention. So in the dynamic, which is precious and illuminating and liberating, in the dynamic of presence and the connection with it, to come back, if the interest is in realizing the infinite and genuinely realizing, the potential for its revelation is in everything. It's that immediate. And it's constantly being confirmed, because you and I know only too well, we can look at something and see that something or that someone, place, environment, situation, inner experience, in countless numbers of ways. There is no restriction to the potential of a human being for infinite discoveries. Look at it. But thought, in its stupidity, has created some idea of infinite, or God, or truth, or reality, and all these other out-to-lunch ideas, far away from the infinite, which is constantly revealing itself right before our eyes and ears. But sadly, we are infatuated, because we've been told to be, with the grasping onto the particular, holding to the particular in a particular way, repeatedly, and then we are told what? The world is full of particulars. The world is full of things, full of objects, full of people, full of separations. And in the world, perceived as things and people and thoughts and ideas and full of separations, that seeing in that way is living in a world of birth and death. It's living in the belief in the finite. And the human being, in our sadness really, and in our terrible loss, sees the finite, through taking up the particular, as the reality, as the ultimate truth, as the way things really are. And with it comes the stress and the terror and the fear and death. So the exploration of the immediacies there, and our capacity, as I mentioned, to recognize the causes and conditions there, and that if we use this beautiful capacity of consciousness, so precious, really, to bring consciousness to bear, or whatever, and to see with that in anything. How much can emerge from the consciousness coming to bear on one particular? How much it can free up outwardly and inwardly? And it would be a pity, actually a huge pity, if a human being settled for a view of life, and then she or he or we think, we've got it. And one of the common views which is put out, very common one, please don't buy it, is called oneness. The idea of oneness, though it's a precious and lovely experience, though it's a lovely unitive feeling that we get, and sometimes it can genuinely be extended far and wide, we can feel really one with each other and one with the earth and life and one with the cosmos, etc. But to settle for that as it were, the ultimate reality, in my poor view, would be a view probably best for lazy people who have lost interest in the inquiry into life, who have settled for a position, have the arrogance and the conceit to claim it as the true reality, and neglecting the immense diversity and wonder of life, the countless explorations which are available to us, in which that liberation and that freedom for that means, even in these beautiful and profound experiences, and there are many, not one single one is worth holding on to, because it will obstruct the liberation. It will get in the way of a liberation which is endless and infinite. And how am I doing for time here? Oh God. 5 o'clock. All right. 2 more minutes. Well, 2.5. That after the talk with you, if I may say, just the other day, and just mention in a few sentences just at the end, and it's likely to be another just a few there, the great freedom of the human being, as I just mentioned, is not settling for a particular position, shall we say, including what's being said here today, so that it keeps things extraordinarily open. And since life is extraordinarily open, that it embraces, shall we call it, the good, the bad, and the ugly, that it embraces such extraordinary diversity, it is so incredibly open. So could it be that as a human being, in some way or other, that vast openness, which is life, which includes everything from birth to death and both sides of it, could it be that as a human being, we have the great capacity to and do express that openness already? Life is so open, it's such a phenomenon, that even in an odd sort of way, when we feel contracted and caught up and stuck, it's another confirmation of how open life is, that it's open to not being open, if you kind of see what I mean. It's utterly inclusive. And consciousness can include that. It can include this immense diversity. In the deep, forgive me now, I'm using the word. In the deep, the movements that go on in the deep, and sometimes the profound appreciations for those movements of the deep, there. Though there may be the wish and the interest for that, in which the self often has the wish in it for it in a kind of particular way. But in the deep, and in the freedom of the deep, we still keep trust in the deepest experience and the deepest intuitions and realizations of life. That this deep can have its own movement, and life must be free in the deepest place to move. We must have that freedom. We might wish for less movement. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Peace, peace, peace. All that. We may wish for that. But the deep must be free in its own way too. And it may at times be shanti, shanti, shanti. Deep peace there. But it may not be. It's not that one is in conflict with the other. The great wonder of life is it's a confirmation of liberation. It's a confirmation of the great freedom of life. And the teachings are about this liberation. It's the best. Male beings explore the experience of life. Male beings love the freedom to explore. Male beings know